Good day and welcome. I'm Paul Levoy, Editor-in-Chief of Ascend Magazine.
And I'm Sarah Riven, Government Affairs Director at Ventia.
And this is Week in Brief, your weekly roundup of the biggest news in licensure, regulation, and digital government. Today we'll be discussing the top stories for the week of April 24th, including massage parlor regulation and psychedelics in Colorado, and new pathways to teaching in West Virginia. Sarah, I hear there's news out of Colorado related to regulating psychedelics. What's the latest there?
So Colorado's Natural Medicine Board is responsible for making recommendations surrounding public health, training medical professionals and first responders, and access to natural psychedelic medicines. This is all because on November 8, 2022, Colorado voters passed a ballot initiative to decriminalize possession of and legalize limited use of psychedelic mushrooms and other natural psychedelic drugs. Colorado is the second state to allow access to psychedelic drugs following Oregon. The Natural Medicine Board now has until September 30th to develop regulations for the psychedelics industry in the state, and the 15-member body had its first meeting on April 13th. As part of this meeting, the board approved a chair and a vice chair and set up six subcommittees that will take on individual parts of this regulation to map out how the industry will be regulated in Colorado. The Department of Regulatory Agencies oversees this advisory board's work. During the meeting, equity and inclusion of Indigenous or religious voices became a focus of how to go about organizing the subcommittees.
What were the different ideas for how to best include different voices in these regulations?
So the central question at this meeting was whether to organize a subcommittee specifically tasked with Indigenous and religious outreach. Some argue that creating a subcommittee to focus on the issue in order to protect the equity lens was critical. But others said creating a subcommittee could create an unfair burden on those voices themselves. In the words of Bill Wayne, a public health lawyer, "Incorporating the Indigenous community into our work is the most critical thing our committee can consider. I just want to make sure those values are embedded seamlessly throughout the process." Similarly, Clarissa Pinkola Estes, a Native American post-trauma recovery specialist, worried the board would become siloed if this focus was put on a subcommittee and not spread throughout all of the discussions.
What's next?
In this meeting, the board decided to keep the subcommittee separate, but they left open the possibility of amending the framework down the road. Paul, also in Colorado, I hear a county is cracking down on human trafficking. What can you tell us about that?
That's right. There's new rules in Douglas County aimed at stopping human trafficking at massage parlors by way of licensing and inspections. So there was a recent public hearing, and there commissioners voted unanimously to roll out licensure requirements for these massage facilities in order to root out human trafficking in the area. One of the commissioners said that illegitimate massage parlors have become a hotbed for human trafficking. Now, in the state broadly, local governments have been regulating massage parlors through local business licensing. There was no provision allowing county governments to do this in unincorporated areas until last year, when the state legislature passed a bill allowing counties to regulate massage businesses.
Why is human trafficking at massage parlors such a problem?
Well, unlike other medical facilities that may involve touching as part of diagnosis or treatment, massage parlors don't face any strict government regulation. Though massage therapy is a legitimate practice, parlors are very discreet and it's all quite private and intimate. That lends itself to many forms of boundary crossing. The women in these places are often coached to speak or avoid speaking with authorities, and there's also a lack of zoning rules in many of these areas, meaning massage parlors can be used as fronts for not only sex work, but other black market activities like money laundering.
And who are the victims?
Victims of human trafficking tend to be women between the ages of 35 and 55. They're women who are flown in from other countries, often South Korea and China, or recent immigrants from these and other countries. They often don't speak English, and they have children that they're desperate to support. Recruiting often occurs through acquaintances or ads promising high income. By the time these women realize they're being sexually exploited or underpaid for their work, it's too late to back out, and they're already trapped by the debt that they incurred for expenses, room and board, and travel.
So what has Douglas County done to address this issue?
Well, in Douglas County, in addition to licenses already required for massage parlors, this ordinance will require them to obtain a license prior to operating and to apply for that license by the end of this year. It also requires applicants to disclose whether they've been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor before for any offenses related to human trafficking, including prostitution, fraud, theft, embezzlement, or money laundering, for example. And there's a few other requirements. One thing we should note is that those who have strong suspicions of human rights violations taking place at massage parlors anywhere coast to coast in the U.S. can call the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888. Sarah, let's pivot to teacher licensure. What's going on in West Virginia to address the teacher shortages there?
Yeah, so in West Virginia, efforts are underway to address the teacher shortage during this month's legislative interim meetings. Earlier this month, Robert Hagerman, who's the director of the Office of Certification for the West Virginia Department of Education, presented revisions to the state's education licensure requirements in a meeting of the Legislative Oversight Commission on Education Accountability. These committees are organized as a committee of legislators who are weighing in on proposed changes to policies and regulations. The revisions Hagerman presented really focus on temporary teaching certificates, and the teaching certificates discussed include temporary certificates for individuals who do not meet the requirements for a professional teaching certificate, but who have been hired by a public school already. Also, for applicants with an expired out-of-state certificate, they can also get a temporary certificate. And for individuals who have completed an improved preparation program, but who have failed the Praxis exam twice. There was discussion in the meeting, but Hagerman really pitched these changes as a new layer of licensing, not lowering standards.
Is there consensus around this step?
Well, as I mentioned, there was some discussion in the meeting, especially because other advocates point to more long-term and sustainable measures to address teacher shortages rather than these sort of short-term stopgap measures. The National Education Association, which is the nation's largest professional employee organization, released a white paper last year in October outlining strategies and solutions to address teacher shortages more holistically. And they really pointed to increasing compensation and improving working conditions as key measures moving forward to address teacher shortages. When it comes to working conditions, teachers really face overwhelming workloads, less time for teaching, and a lack of autonomy and support in the classroom. So the white paper looked at those as being key focus points for addressing teacher shortages across the country. They say increasing